I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation Cure Master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at SurreyFarms.com or VirginiaTraditions.com. I bought you pepper. I bought you salt.
Hello, welcome to the main course. I am your guest host, Jason Colucci. There's a couple of things I have to go through here. I'm filling in for Patrick Martins and Katie Kiefer. Unfortunately, it is tax season, and Patrick is in the Cayman Islands with all of his hiding all of his wealth down there that he produces through Heritage Foods. I have a co-host today, Jamie Wehner, sitting directly across from me.
Hello.
And we have some excellent guests. I just want to talk a little. I woke up this morning. You know, they call me on Monday to kind of do this, and I woke up this morning. I was a little stressed out. It was 8 o'clock in the morning, and I had a little dilemma. It was, do I have coffee or do I try to find a cocktail at 8 o'clock in the morning? And I live in Park Slope in Brooklyn, and Gorilla Coffee is really, really strong. I don't know if you guys have ever had it. It's like you kind of have a panic attack if you have too much of it. So I didn't want to go there. So I know there's a place called Jackie's Fifth Amendment on Fifth Avenue. And I called them. I called them at 9 o'clock this morning. And the guy picked up the phone. I said, hi, are you guys open right now? He's like, sure, come on in. So I went over there. I got picked up the New York Post. I got a bunch of other stuff. And I was kind of going over notes for the show today. And it's a real old man's bar. First of all, there was 7 people in the bar before I got there. And, you know, they have that sort of, like, catalog of booze. So I walk in there, I'm like, oh, I have something to drink. And it's just like, it's Absolut, it's Beefeater, it's Cuervo. And so I'm like, oh, what the hell do I drink? So I just had a little bit of tequila, and not too much, just to kind of mellow me out because I was really nervous. Kind of get that way. And then I'm texting the guests, making sure they're there, and I'm like, here, and then I'm neurotic about it, and they're like texting me 3 times. I'm trying to wake everybody up. On top of the fact it's tax season, and you know, somebody told me last night that it's, you can report, and Jamie, I don't know if you know about this, but apparently 30%, because we're in the food industry, we are food professionals here, all of us, that you can claim or report 30% of your food purchases you can get back.
No, I didn't know that.
So between me and you, we can finance a small country with the amount of stuff we purchase on a daily basis. So, for example, where did you go last night? Did you go out last night?
No. I was sick at home with food poisoning.
No, don't worry. So don't mention it. For legal purposes.
Being in the food industry.
If not, I would have been out.
For legal purposes, hopefully. Please do not mention where you got food poisoning.
No, fine.
But also, let me just open up the room. We have some guests we're going to really get into an interview with in the second segment. Rachel Greenspan and Cecilia Estridge from Makuni Wild Harvest.
Yo,
Two of... The most dynamic, fascinating people that are working in the food industry right now, that are, what I like to say, hit the pavement, kind of always on their phones, on their Blackberries. I have a Blackberry. I know that company's kind of going out of business right now. Unfortunately, you know, I can't really get an iPhone at this point in time.
Way to bring the mood down so early in the morning.
I actually have an Android,
clarify. The droid technology.
The droid technology.
Now for radio purposes, can you guys, just so we can identify a voice with a name, can you introduce yourself and say where you guys are from?
I am Rachel, and originally I'm from an hour north of the city in Rockland County, but I currently live pretty close to where we are broadcasting in Williamsburg.
You're not applying to colleges right now.
Voice identification. This is my voice.
Okay, Cecilia.
And I am Cecilia.
And your last name?
Estridge.
Okay.
And, what she said.
If you guys want to sort of follow on the Twitter, the Jason Colucci, THEJSONCOLUCCI, the Jason Colucci. If you guys Twitter me within the show, you can come down to Roberta's. I'll buy you a cocktail, whatever you want.
That's radio host ever.
Yeah, seriously. My per diem is, but you guys can come down. So wait, you went, wait, where did you go? Didn't you go, you went to Market Table this week, Jamie, right? Mm-hmm. And isn't that such a... The thing I liked about the restaurant, it's such a neighborhood restaurant. It was like just really chill. I was there, by the way. But it was really chill. It was really chill, and it kind of went at 10 o'clock. Like, it's, you know, the staff isn't looking to like rush you out, but it's slowing down, and like nobody's ready to drop the check, but. And the energy in the
secretly room. They're like, get out of here. Yeah, well, they, one of these people leaving.
They all kind of think that. We're also on top of the fact we're also coming up on Passover and Easter. And by the way, the reason why I leaked the Twitter out was, yes, of course I want to get some followers. But also, if anyone knows where to get some really good matzah crackers.
Streitz's factory on the Lower East Side.
Yes, but who distributes them?
Blue Ribbon, actually, also on Bedford Street, makes a commendable matzah.
Yes, but
matzah.
I have to walk there and get it. I like the trucks to come to
Wait,
come to
you,
me.
Are you asking that we start distributing matzah? Mooney Wild Harvest?
No. I mean, it's Easter. You know, Easter's here. Passover's here. We both kind of compete for attention. You know, whoever wins. But, you know,
we both... Passover won this year.
Yeah. We both cook a really good lamb, you know. It's really good lamb. But I was talking. Now, I have to preface this entire interview. I have friendships with everybody here for journalistic integrity. I have to say that. But Cecilia, weeks ago, was talking about giving up some stuff for
Lent. Yes.
Did it? I don't think any of that sort of came to fruition.
In fact, it didn't pan out at all. And now I'm talking about going on the Passover diet.
Yes, the Passover diet. The Passover diet is actually happening. There will be no carbs in our office for 1 whole week.
3 centuries in the making. You can't do it. It is the best.
Perfect timing, right before summer. You have to do it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's how the Jews planned it.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking with Lent, and then.
But
I made it 24 hours.
I myself gave up Chinese food for Lent. And but
what kind of Jew are you?
And no, I felt, and I told somebody that, like, what are you, like a 60-year-old man? I'm like the best comfort food for myself is Chinese food. And Rachel, do you have like a fallback? Because Chinese food is really weird in the city, because you have the fry places. Ooh. And then you have the palacy places.
I'm actually the one Jew in all of New York City who hates Chinese food.
Oh, wow.
I'm like that person. So I have no recommendations for you.
Perfect. I asked the right person. Let's move down right to Cecilia.
Do I have a go-to Chinese restaurant?
I don't know. Chinese food to me is really like, it's a Sunday. I'm a little hungover. I want to have some fun stuff.
I just go straight for the bagels and lox. Yeah.
We have a treacherously bad Chinese takeout restaurant on my block that we order from every once in a while when everyone's like epically hungover, but it's food poisoning central. I don't know if you got yours there, but like.
That's awesome. Well, I'm talking here with Cecilia Estrich and Rachel Greenspan, along with my co-host, Jamie Wehner. We're going to take a little break here, and then I'm going to just make it talk serious for the second segment, and we're going to talk about Mooney Wild Harvest, what they're doing. Awesome.
The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune into The Food Scene Tuesdays at 3 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network. Hosted by Michael Harlan Turkel, photo editor of Edible Brooklyn and Edible Manhattan magazines, he'll further explore the amalgamation of food and art by talking to artists from a multitude of media. Guests will range from photographers, food stylists, interior architects for restaurants, industrial designers, all the players that make you want to eat with your eyes. Get ready to feast your ears every Tuesday at 3 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
And we're back. I'm here with my guests, Cecilia Estridge, Rachel Greenspan, and my co-host, Jamie Wehner. I am Jason Colucci, filling in for Katie Kiefer and Patrick Martins here on the main course. Now, Makuni Wala Harvest is a fascinating company in the sense that they kind of do a bunch of different things. They are sort of the main brokers of truffles in New York City. They do amazing amount of mushrooms, and now they started this a local program, which either Cecilia or Rachel will get into. But if Cecilia, if you can just sort of give me a brief description of what Makuni is, how they came about, and how you came to the picture.
Well, Makuni is a purveyor that's actually West Coast based, and they started as a wholesaler of wild foraged mushrooms, and they were sort of at the forefront of the Matsutake mushroom industry. And they were selling phenomenal amounts of wild mushrooms, and they were exporting them abroad. And after September 11th, there was a lot of, you know, shipping issues.
Yeah.
Just because, like, planes were grounded and all the customs laws changed. And so they started to pull out of the wholesale industry and get more wrapped up in being a, you know, direct sales to restaurant, like, traditional purveyor on the West Coast. And they really found their niche in sort of wild forage foods, so like oxalis, wild licorice root, stinging nettles, that sort of thing. And then from there, their main hub is Seattle. Our main hub is Seattle.
How much time do you actually, like, I talk to a lot of salespeople on the phone, and it seems an enormous amount of time is spent at the airport with customs. Is that a big part? Is that an entire job position?
Well, we actually are fortunate because we don't have to deal with that much, because most of what we sell is domestic.
Okay.
Truffles, definitely. There's, you know, customs issues and shipments held up, but we don't really. I guess we sell Canadian product, but we don't have that many customs issues. But that, I feel like, for people who are doing a lot of international stuff, that's an issue.
Cool. And now, like, a majority of your day, like, what are people buying right now from you guys? Like, what is it in the main? Is it still mushrooms? Is that kind of what's going on?
Well, yeah, definitely wild mushrooms. Like, morel season is going strong yes. right now.
Porcini?
South African porcini.
Yeah, in the house. I was meeting, and they're like, I'm like, oh, they're Italian. I'm like, just so out of it. Like, oh, I think they're from Italy. And they're like, these are South African porcini. I was like, all right, it's South African.
Whatever. You could still use a French accent if you want.
So
we sell everything with a French accent.
Totally.
And so now a majority of time is, like, kind of moving. And what is, like, all right, so a mushroom's picked or it's cultivated or whatever, in whatever sense. Like, what is sort of, like, how quick do you have to get that out, and how fast are you?
As fast as possible. I mean, yeah. You don't want stuff sitting around ever. And I feel like that's one thing we do really well. Is mm-hmm.
because, but is there, like, an oh shit day? Like, oh fuck, we gotta get this thing out.
No, that never happens.
Do you read our
email?
Day three.
You know, weekend like bargain list. No, that's not true though. What? Every once in a while, there is, to be frank, a moment where there's something that we're long on that we have to get out fast. But,
yeah, I feel like one of the reasons the quality of our product is so good is because we're moving it quickly and just constantly rotating it out. And our warehouse guys are awesome, and, like, that's what they focus on.
But you guys, I know, I've known you previous from another company. I'm not going to mention them. They don't deserve any kind of publicity. But I met you guys both there. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of came and you were working at Rachel, you worked at the Green Market for a while. I don't know which company you were at. And Cecilia was kind of in limbo a little bit for a week or so.
That's how we roll.
And then you both came to Makuni.
Yes.
And after sort of the dust settled and everything, you started this amazing New York program.
Yeah.
Which is sort of kind of exploded so much that from my perspective, it seems like you might need to hire more people. But can you talk a little bit about that, Rachel?
Yeah. So we had been working at Makuni for about 2 months, I want to say. And then we had a lot of farmers who we were working with at our last company who we didn't really feel like were getting the representation that they needed. So we approached like 3 of them to start and just, you know, asked them if they wanted to work with us and, you know, kind of promised to give their product the respect that it deserved.
Do you want to mention any of these?
Yeah. So the one that we start, well, the main area that we started with was Washington County, which is about 4 hours north of here. And we started working with this farm, Battenkill Valley Creamery, which has some of the best milk and
number
cream
one
on
milk
on
in New York State.
If you're ordering,
says Cornell.
If you're ordering a $5 latte, and you're not in Starbucks, chances are it's Battenkill milk.
Absolutely. Nothing foams better.
Unless you're in Brooklyn, and then it'll be closer to like $3.50.
This is true.
Yes. But yeah, so we started selling this milk, which is just this amazing like single source milk. All the cows are milked on the same farm where it's processed and all of the feed is grown locally. And he's kind of like a central location for a lot of the surrounding farmers that we work with. So he's like a drop-off point.
So they could drop it off there. Exactly. And he's cool. He'll be like, all right, this farmer can drop it off.
This That's is awesome. A really cool community of farmers mm-hmm. that like doesn't have any access to the New York City market, really. It's someone described it to us a while back as like what the Hudson Valley was in the 1970s. It's like people who are doing things in a really like old-fashioned way, mm-hmm. All small scale and just producing awesome stuff.
And a lot of these, you know, one interesting thing is a lot of these farmers are in their late 20s, early 30s.
It's divided.
You know,
yeah.
So like, when you see
some are really young,
when you see their when you see it, like, you know, the association is you see this old farmer and it's like American Gothic. You know, he comes out and he sits and, you know, he's sitting and you make this negotiation with him. It's highly educated people, you know, that kind of just wanted to chill out and kind of do something different and alternative.
Seth at Battenkill is, I think, maybe. Yeah. And he was working at a bank in Boston and then he is a like, fifth generation dairy farm came back and was like, I want to turn this into like a thriving functional business.
And he did in like 3 years,
which is incredible. And like, he's the model, I think, of sort of the future of small, mid-sized scale farming. Mm-hmm. He was selling all of his milk, or his father was selling all of his milk to a big dairy processor.
And just got blended into whatever.
Got Agrimark buys it and it turns mm-hmm. into whatever.
And they buy it at the lowest possible price.
So if you're not subsidized because you're too small, you basically pay your cost of production is all retail, hugely expensive, and you're selling at whatever the market sets, so you basically get sunk. There's no way that you can be profitable as a dairy farm in upstate New York. Mm-hmm. And so your two options are become a cheese production site or you sell a really high-end quality product at a premium, which is what he did, and he's thriving now. He's doing really well, and he so deserves it, you know, because I don't think he sleeps, but.
No, we don't. But Jamie, your procurement royalty in terms of Jamie Wehner, his family's company is called Sid Wehner. Sid Wehner and Son. Sorry. And what's their they're doing business? If it's like Friendly Foods or Friendly something, is there like
we used to be Friendly Fruit?
Friendly Fruit. But can you talk about some stuff that like they were talking about? Because you always bring up farmers that you guys have been doing business with forever. Is there some like something that comes up in your head that is similar to that kind of experience? Not necessarily with dairy or something, but is there any people you've known your entire life that have been producing stuff in small, like, you brought up cranberries at the time or something. What was it?
Right. Well, we have a cranberry bog up in Massachusetts that we've been working with for 3 generations. But I think in terms of kind of helping small farms become profitable, we have a farm in Dartmouth and we'll do a lot of testing there. And then we work with thousands of farms around the country, thousands of acres, and help produce produce in a way that's sustainable and can help them turn profit and really just help the small farms grow in a way that they previously didn't know how to. So,
and you guys,
do the testing for
them. It's interesting because you guys have always had this business model and now it's sort of kind of come and, you know, it's not necessarily a kind of a boutique idea, but it's sort of now it's sort of mainstream, but you guys have been doing this for a long time, you mm-hmm. know, and I feel like that company doesn't get mentioned as much because they're not really based out of New York, but you guys do a lot of business out of New York.
Right.
But it's just fun at any given point where people kind of are able to. These farmers aren't looking to break the bank. They're looking just to kind of like do what they do, make some money,
right.
and kind of stuff. And then there's what is that egg company that you guys are working with?
Right now we're working, so we have this sect of farmers up in Washington County, and then we're also working with this guy up in the Finger Lakes region, and he has a lot
Seneca Lake?
Seneca Falls.
Oh, hey. Oh, really good, really good Riesling.
Really
there.
Amazing.
Really good Riesling. So good. Seneca.
It's my German Riesling, but
I love the German Riesling. The Mosel, something from the Mosel, something from the Rheingau. Yeah, so 2 points of the Rheingau are watching like the military channel and German wine, you know. But so you guys doing? But the eggs, like you just started the eggs because I noticed it on your sheet the past 2 weeks.
Well, yes,
what we're doing right now is kind of putting together a list of the local product that we think are most distinctive and high quality. Like Mikuni as a company is a purveyor that sells esoteric, unique product. And so, like, we think these eggs are amazing. They've got, like, neon orange yolks. They, like...
I've seen them because you brought over some samples, but it's pretty amazing products. And and you guys, I mean, there's somebody might be listening to this, but you guys just sell high-end pretty much. I mean, you do sort of hit that two-star world, but you're selling to Danielle, you're selling to Per Se, and all these companies and stuff. And there are, you know, they're very demanding kind of people.
But we're also selling to, like,
the middle, Roberta's. Yeah, the 1-2-star world, if you will.
Well, and that's what we're trying to do right now, because we do have this identity of, you know, being really veering towards the high end, and we think that, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff happening in New York food right now. You know, Brooklyn restaurants are blowing
up. So hot right now.
So hot right now. We want to be able to hit everyone sort of and be accessible to, you know, not just that top 1%.
Right. Awesome. I'm sitting here with Rachel Greenspan and Cecilia Estridge from Mikuni Wild Harvest and my co-host, Jamie Wehner, filling in for Patrick Martins. And we're at the main course. We're going to go into the third segment, and I'm going to sort of open the forum to kind of just sort of stuff that's going on, stuff that pops in your head. But we're talking about spring in New York means one thing: a guy's going to show up at your back door with ramps in his, you know, trunk.
In a basket.
A guy or
Rachel Greenspan.
If anyone ever did like a business study of like the price of ramps and how it like fluctuates like hourly, it's like, you know, so it's like the highest, like in a 2 week period, it's like, well, I got ramps at like $15 a pound. Like two days later, it's like $4. And you got a guy showing me the door, like, I don't know what to do with these things. And then 6 months later, you're drinking like a ramp martini at some place. And you kind of think to yourself, I wonder, how old is this ramp thing? You're questioning the curing like process.
The ramp
of
butter.
The chef,
like, ramp kimchi was the scariest one that we tried last season.
Oh my gosh.
So ramps, nettles, is that where you guys are?
That is right now. Yeah, ramps, nettles, miner's lettuce.
I wonder what chefs are like.
Oxalis, that is the one. Wild wood sorrel, and it's been a bad season for wild wood sorrel.
Is that because of Rene Redzepi creating all that kind of?
Rene Redzepi has like set the tone.
The thing is with Noma is when I go and I forage in the forest.
I feel like Rene. I've never met the guy, but I've watched him a couple of times, and I think as a, you know, Danielle, when you meet him, he's just like he is on TV. He's just as passionate, and he's an amazing guy. But I feel like one of Rene Redzepi's shortcomings is he's not necessarily a TV personality, because he did a TED TV thing, and I'm kind of addicted to that. I stopped watching it. I was like,
did you? I was like riveted the entire time.
It seemed kind of forced because I don't. I generally don't think the guy likes doing it, but I just see some PR machine be like, you gotta get out there, you gotta promote your book, you gotta do this, you gotta do that, and he just doesn't come across as that kind of a personality.
He seemed nervous, but he also seemed, I thought, like, hugely passionate.
Oh, yeah.
Told a few off-color jokes first, maybe.
One of the stages at a restaurant I work at, he went and did a stage at Rene Redzepi's place in Noma, and he didn't have any place to go for Christmas, so he had Rene Redzepi had him at his house for Christmas. So whatever, let's move on. But so Nettle,
that all sounded on the radio.
Yeah.
So spring, Jamie, anything? Spring. What's going on over at Wainer? What do you guys do spring wise? You guys got anything fun going on? Same stuff, nettles, ramps, all that stuff.
Pretty much. Let's say lamb's quarters.
Yeah.
Poor man's lettuce.
Wild dandelion greens.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wild buttercress.
The red frilly mustard.
Red frilly mustard is so beautiful.
I'm always fascinated by the stuff that you guys have, like baby coconuts, yuzu,
baby. What do you do with this? Oh, put in a cocktail.
Baby greens.
That's a whole nother. I mean, that's a business within itself. That whole micro. Because you guys do
mixology. We're trying to tap it right now.
You know, the mixology world is weird because you're dealing with the bar community who aren't the most punctual people in the world.
No.
You know, and they can kind of like get by because there's, you know, like somebody comes in and they're like 86 something. And most of the time they won't notice that the one element of a 12 element cocktail is not in it. Like,
there's no egg yolk in this.
This doesn't seem as frosty as it was yesterday.
That element of acidity.
So they can kind of get away with it.
But they're the ones that ask for the most obscure items. More so than chefs.
Do you think chefs ask for obscure items just to be
because
annoying?
Of Rene Redzepi?
No. it all comes full circle. It all goes back to Noma. But do you think?
I think it's just hard to do something different. So they're always looking to.
Yeah, it's very uninspiring.
Especially
New York in the fall and in the winter. It's like the most. It's just for a chef. It's like beets. What are you guys whispering over there? There's no secrets in the studio. There are no.
We're trying to determine if this April Fool's joke is appropriate for the radio.
It's definitely appropriate for the radio.
Oh, wait, I saw that.
Oh, my God.
So speaking of
chefs always trying to source the most unique, cutting-edge product.
This was awesome, by the way, because it takes away like that sort of like four-star edge where they're like, oh, we know everything. And they saw that and they were like jumped all over.
Yep. So we, on April Fool's Day, put together like a hot sheet, like marketing email about fruit from the Swiss spaghetti tree. It was like a 1960s, April Fool's hoax from the BBC.
Like 1958.
And they, like, the BBC put together this video of people, like harvesting spaghetti. And, like, I guess spaghetti was, like, so exotic in the 1950s in England that people were like, oh, yeah, that could happen. Spaghetti could possibly grow on a tree. And so we got the video. We embedded it in the email. We found a picture of, like, spaghetti fruit. We wrote this, like, really elaborate email being like, this just in, fruit from the Swiss spaghetti tree. Rachel at the end wrote in like retail packs available. And like it was
$15.99 a pound.
And we sent it out. We like, it was one of those things where we were like jumping off a cliff. We were like, okay, are you gonna do it?
Wait,
one, two, three. And then we were like, go. And then we were like, oh shit, we just sent that out.
Seconds later, I get a 10-pound order from a chef.
And it was all day. People were calling in, like, I'd really like a sample of the spaghetti fruit. Yeah.
That's the stuff. Because and if you actually said those names of those chefs,
we will not.
No. Yeah. I know you won't. But that would be hysterical because people would be like,
it was.
Can I please have a sample of the spaghetti tree?
I grew up in France. My whole life, I never saw the spaghetti tree. What is this, Rene Redzepi? What is he doing to this world of food? What is the fridge? And then, in typical French chef fashion, he's hugging you 2 seconds later. Yeah, so it's an April Fool's hoax. It's April Fool's. It's American April Fool's. It's like, oh, no. I love you guys. We work really hard. I love you guys. That is like, yeah, the best things. So in an effort to go into the third segment, I wrote, since everybody here is a salesperson, sales associate, whatever, sales manager. Whoever you guys want to market yourselves.
Culinary team.
Culinary
the
team.
McCooney Culinary Team.
I wrote a little poem here for you guys. It's a little spoken word, which I call Ode to the Salesperson or Sales, whatever you want to call it.
We're all blushing right now.
I know. No one's ever written a poem for
honored.
Me.
We'll go into the commercial. And I, you know, I might not read this perfectly because I just wrote this thing like an hour ago. We'll go into the commercial. We'll come back. We'll open the
what
form.
What kind of poem are we looking at here? Like I want to
It is an iambic pentameter. It is,
as it should be.
I know you too well.
But we'll go into the third segment and we'll open the floor. I want to just talk about restaurants, what's going on, and just sort of take the edge off and just have fun with it. Jack, are we all queued up over there? Or where is he at?
There's a beat. Drop the beat.
Shh. This is the Diggable Planets, the Rebirth of Slick. I'm Jason Colucci. I will be. Oh, how you travel up and down the pavement. Oh, how you grind in and out of the bowels of the New York City restaurant world. The phone, the pen, the price list. Things seem to linger on forever. Chefs smile and frown, commodities up and down. The ad on the pre-order, please make it all stop. But please remember my sales associate friend. It's only food. There are no deaths of salespeople here. And no, you may put me on COD. I still love thee. That's you guys. Thank you. All right, we're going to take a break now. This is the main course. I'm here with Cecilia Etchings, Rachel Grinspan, and Jamie Wehner.
Regulators. You regulate any stealing of his property. We're damn good, too. But you can't be any geek off the street. Gotta be handy with the steel, if you know what I mean. Earn your keep.
Regulators! Mount up!
It was a clear black night, a clear white moon. Warmer G was on the streets, trying to consume some skirts for the E, so I could get some phones. Rolling in my ride, chilling all alone.
Just hit the east side of the LBC on a mission trying to find Mr. Warren G. Seen a car full of girls, ain't no need to tweak. All of you search, know what's up with 213.
So I hooked a left on 21 and Lewis. Some brothers shooting dice, so I said, let's do this. I jumped out the rock and said, what's up? Some brothers pulled some gas, so I said,
since these girls peepin' me, I'm on glide and swerve. These hookers looking so hard, they straight hit the curve. Want to bigger, better things than some horny tricks. I see my homie and some suckers all in his mix.
I'm getting jacked, I'm breaking myself. I can't believe they taken Warren 12. They took my rings, they took my Rolex.
That was the late Warren G performing the Regulators.
Well, late Nate Dogg.
Nate Dogg, sorry.
Warren's still going.
All right. Oh.
Thank you for knowing that.
Yes. I stopped following my Blood and Crip Twitter feed, so I didn't know who was around. But thank you for that, Jack. I appreciate that. Damn, Google, I hate you.
I just have to give you props one more time for that poem.
Yeah, oh my God. Oh. We're putting that out in our next email blast, just so you
put Warren G to shame.
That'll be on iTunes for $1.99 tomorrow.
This is the part of the show where I think is the most fun for me because I'm friends with everyone here, all the guests, and we have dined together and had cocktails together, and I respect all of their opinions. These are people that eat out 6 days, 6 days a week. And remember, remember in those 6 days, there's a lunch in there, so that's pretty much 12 times. on top of the fact they're probably getting the chef's idea in their purest form, meaning when they sit down at a restaurant, the chef's probably sending out the best stuff. Not that you know everyday people don't get that stuff. No, it comes to you too. But the real expression of the food they sell comes to their plates. And it's in the break, Cecilia brought up Vinegar Hill House, and I totally agree. I totally agree, and I'm not being biased or anything with this place. A year ago, I went there when it first opened, and my God, I don't know if it's the neighborhood, it's just the food, it's the atmosphere, or the people. Every time I've gone there, I've been there 3 times. It's just an amazing experience. Can you guys talk about that a little bit?
We were about to start talking about restaurants, and Rachel and I had like a panicked, what's our favorite?
I don't know.
We have no favorites, but we both immediately were like, Vinegar Hill House.
Yeah, it's a happy place.
It is a happy place. The food is always unpretentiously just
spot on.
Yeah, like clean, just amazing, comforting, wonderful food. It's always like creative and exciting, but like not jarring in any way. It's still like traditional.
When
and
you when you guys travel, so well done. But when you guys go there, because this is a big part of going to the Vinegar Hill House.
It's how do you
it's
get
very
there?
Old, it's very old. It's very old New York, and it's an experience I think a lot of New Yorkers used to have. Now that there's transportation and cabs everywhere, and people aren't afraid to go to certain areas. Maybe Bushwick, I don't know, but the
who goes to Bushwick?
No, I'm kidding. Are we right kidding. Now? We need to be invited back here. But, but I think the experience is an experience like when I used to work for Drew Nepporn, and one of the things he used to talk about when he opened Ma Trichet, which was one of his first restaurants, got 3 stars from Brian Miller in the New York Times, and you know Keith McNally had the Odeon down there, and Drew decided to open this French fine dining restaurant with David Boulay. And he was like, one of the hardest things was to get, you know, the when people came there to get him back, find a cab. And I almost feel like that's the same experience. But that, like, when you're really into dining and you really like going out, I feel like that's a big
experience. Like part of the adventure.
It's part of the adventure.
It's so true. And it's true of this place as well, I think, of Roberta's, that, like, there's an adventure in it somewhere that you're like.
You guys seem very adventurous when you were driving up this morning when I saw you drive by. It seemed like you guys were struggling with that GPS that was in front of your car. No, I was communicating with my Arecibo driver.
We did roll up in a baller car today.
I'd like to give
belongs to Rachel's mother.
I do like that same thing plug. Though. I start to turn my GPS, so it's like I'm in it. I'm like,
we found it without GPS today. I'm just saying.
I'm very proud. You know, every time I do the show here, it's fun because a big part of the experience is calling Arecibo, which is my cab company. 718-783-6465.
Best cab company in Brooklyn, I would say. They're actually sponsoring the show today.
Yeah, I wish. So and then the guy's like, where are you going? I'm like, I'm going to this address. He's like, where is it? Give me your phone. Give me your phone technology. I was like, here. And I gave my BlackBerry, and it just had a general kind of like picture where it was. It didn't say streets or anything. He's like, oh, I know where that is. I'm like, are you sure? I was like, and I'm all anxious about getting here on time, like an hour early. And like, I don't know. Wait, is
Jason has a punctuality.
He told us 11:30 was when the show started.
So you have to. I'm not saying anyone here is flaky, but in New York, you have to take. You have to evaluate the person and then incorporate the flake factor. Incorporate the flake factor. Now, some people might be like, you know, sort of number 10 flake factor, where you got to tell them, oh, be there at 9.
There's an iPhone app for this. Yeah,
flake factor. But anyway, let's get back to Vinegar Hill House. Can you so the entire experience, and even when you walk in there, because it seems like you're in Bruges or something. Like you're walking.
It's like you're in somebody's house. Yeah. I think totally, and it's always packed. It's always chaos, but it's like very well managed, like comforting chaos. Mm-hmm. It always smells amazing.
Oh my god! And even we've done like 2 deliveries there in the last few weeks ourselves.
You don't want to leave
at 1 o'clock, and like you get out of the car and like there's this
wood
wonderful
smoke and like
delicious smell. Then and you're like, I'm home.
You walk outside, you look to your left, you see the electrical depot, and you're like, oh, I know.
And here we are.
The transfer station that's right there. It's like, I don't know. But I agree with you 100%. I went there just on a whim one time, and I had a great experience. And every time I've gone back, it's gotten better and better.
Yeah.
But, Jamie, you wanted to talk about a restaurant that you've been going to.
I have a couple. Whenever people ask me for restaurant recommendations, I get like anxiety.
Yeah, oh my god.
I think this must be part of working in the food industry because like there's like 1,000 restaurants. All of a sudden, you're like, wait, but what are you looking for?
Yeah,
and I should know this. And can you just choose a restaurant? No, you need to.
Well, people and people look at you as an
authority.
It's almost like
pull from my brain.
Someone asked me for a Mexican restaurant recommendation.
Wait, this is interesting. Can you? Because Mexican is really weird.
I love Mexican.
Because where do you go with that?
Like,
it can go in a million different directions.
New York has no good Mexican food anyway. If you're from San Francisco,
none of us are. So,
but
no,
he
you're
was like East
right.
Village Mexican restaurant. I really had the same experience.
Margarita?
I was like, shit, that's what I said.
Which place?
Margarita. They have really good fish tacos.
Yeah.
La Lucha or something I just went to. That was very.
That was
delicious.
Good.
Yeah.
But Jamie, get back to what you were talking about with. Restaurant, because we were talking about it. Just bringing up the restaurant we're going to talk about. Cause
I don't have any favorites, but I did really like Walter Foods.
I agree.
In Brooklyn.
I agree.
Yeah, good. So good. Everything we had was amazing.
What's, you know, I hate
the
to say, I don't know, Bob.
The fried
the chef.
Commodore.
Still
fried chicken.
The Commodore.
Fried chicken, the Commodore. Do it.
Do it.
Get on.
Let's stay on Walter Foods, because I've been there a couple of times too, and I really enjoyed the experience. But what's Bob's last name? I don't know his last name.
Just Chef Bob.
Chef Bob. You know, when I was there, is one of those chefs that's like, he's working the line and he's like trying to do some fun stuff. And like you said about Vinegar Hills, the food there is really unpretentious. Now, one of my things I love to order is a Caesar salad, and I ordered it there, but it's like one of those things that you have to order if it's on a menu, you know, somewhere like you normally wouldn't go.
I had a Caesar salad recently.
M. Wells.
You went with smoked herring dressing.
Killer.
Yeah, it was so good.
Sorry to
M. Wells. So hot right now. So hot right now.
Trending.
Yeah. M. Wells.
The Au Pied de Cochon trend.
And they don't even have a PR firm in Wells.
So hot right now. So hot, out of borough dining. So hot right now. But no. I really want to concentrate on Walter Foods for 2 seconds, because I enjoyed the food, and it's something as simple as having oysters there, which are like, okay, it's really straightforward, but there's definitely a process to sort of like keeping stuff fresh and selling it and not being too crazy and sort of having something fall in the middle ground where you can kind of meet the volume demand and also sort of like satisfy the customer and not be too esoteric. And I feel like Walter Foods kind of hits that. Mm-hmm. And it was a fun place to be in. It was just really fun to be in.
Great
really
neighborhood restaurant.
Yeah, yeah. Really good.
Every time I've been there.
Even worth the travel. Not even just because, you know. Over in the Lower East Side.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, that's a nice walk, you know, over the Williamsburg Bridge.
It is.
Worth the trip.
Yeah.
So how about in your neighborhood, our neighborhood?
Oh.
South Brooklyn.
I don't want to
Yeah, let's get off of Williamsburg.
I don't want to... is that South Brooklyn?
I don't know direction. I'm really kidding.
But no, it's really tough because I bring so much baggage to that conversation. It's not even funny. Like, Aldi La is a conversation I have all the time with people.
When I talk about Aldi La, I
bring something to it. Like, the chef there, she studied in Italy. She met her husband. They came to the U.S. They opened Aldi La. Now, I tell you, this is not a lie.
This is
not
a girl's dream.
This
mm-hmm.
is not.
We're all in.
Yeah.
Can you cue the
Florence and the Machine song, please? Dog days are over.
How's that?
Please, VHS. But so when she came here, when I went there, and I would get, I'd feel a cold. It was the most sort of like motherly cooking I ever had. I would really go there, and I would have like tripe or whatever it was, and when I first opened it, like you can taste everything. They're finishing their Bloody Marys, by the way. It was just amazing. And then now I go there, it's still good, it's still busy and stuff, but that's sort of like, I bring that to the table, and people go there, they enjoy it, they love it, and I still do. But when they first opened, the reason why they got so popular is because that food was like eating at home. It was the closest thing to,
right, you know, so eating at home. It seems like, and that's the trend that everybody actually wants to partake in.
Totally. And I feel like that's the double-edged sort of opening that type of restaurant and then getting like enormously popular really fast is like, you, when you first open, are able to do that like home style, like really attentive cuisine, and then all of a sudden, like an hour before service starts, you have like a line 20 deep waiting to get in, which happened to Aldi La. Like, yeah, you would go by at like 4:30 and there would already be people.
And you just
like,
see, yeah, lined line up. And you see the pissed off servers inside.
Just like,
ugh, God, couldn't you wait 5 minutes? it's like that. There's two looks in the restaurant world, like before the shift and after the shift. Before the shift is you're the first customer, you get that look. And then there's the look that sort of cancels out for them when you walk in at brunch at 3:30 and brunch ends at 3:30 and the host is like, oh, sorry, yeah. Brunch is over. It's like, and they love telling you that. They're like, yeah, no, you can come back at 5. No, totally. No, sit at the bar. Stay at the bar. You come back at 5, you know. That kind of thing. Like, well, it's silly. We live in the same neighborhood. So what, and you didn't grow up there, but you sort of are a Sloopy in the sense that you did go to Berkeley Carroll High School, so you know the neighborhood. Other than one of my other favorite restaurants, Sun Luck Chinese food. What do you?
I'm more of Mr. Wonton person myself.
What's a restaurant that, you know, people listening would know that you really like?
Well, I feel like the one that everyone always talks about, or Aldi La and Franny's. And Franny's is amazing.
Yeah.
It's consistent. But one that never gets any play that I love is on my block on Vanderbilt Avenue. Aliseo del Borgo.
What is this? Is this new?
They've been there since like the mid 90s.
Don't talk about it. Everybody's going to go.
We got strike it from the record. But it is the best, most romantic little date restaurant in the world.
Really? Have you been on a date there recently?
I have not, actually. Okay. I imagine I often go together.
We go
because Vinegar Hill House was one of my fallback dates.
That is a great date restaurant too. But this is different because like it never is written up anywhere, and it's owned by this unbelievable, fantastic guy from Le Marche in Italy. And he's like, he was a photographer for years and like part of, I think, like the Studio 54 generation. Mm-hmm. But he had a passion for food, and he opened this teeny tiny little restaurant. It's like, I think there are four tables and a bar. And it's like warm and cozy inside, and he does all the food himself, and he's like a total
curing.
Yeah, he's a total nerd about everything. Like,
does he have the proper certification to do that?
Oh,
I'm kidding around.
Did you like both of our panic? We're like, oh, we shouldn't have said anything. But it's great food.
You mean free cable?
And he's great at like interacting with his guests, mm-hmm. and sort of like telling you everything. And he's a wine geek
very
too,
and stuff like that.
He's a host.
I've met your mom before, and does your parents go there? Cause
constantly.
Yeah.
But you know, my dad actually does not. He's not the biggest fan of Aliseo because it's cramped. Like, it's like a tiny like ground floor of a brownstone, and I think my father needs like big and spacious at this point.
I think one of the most romantic things that I heard in a long time was that your parents have dinner at Blue Ribbon every week.
Friday at 5:45.
I don't know if that's romantic or monotonous, but it is. They show up there.
My father is
those big roomy. I saw that John Mayer video. Those big roomy banquettes, sitting down there in the city. They go
but
in Manhattan.
My dad is like a born and raised New Yorker, and he has a really interesting relationship with New York City restaurants. Like, he'll pick one, and it will be his home for like the next decade. Like, before this, it was I'm drawing a blank on the name now. D'Amberto.
Oh,
it's like weird Italian restaurant, like Tuscan restaurant on 17th Street with like curtains in the windows. You can't really see in. And my father lived at this restaurant. Like, if you were to meet him for anything, it would be at D'Amberto.
Speaking of Italian restaurants, there was something I wanted to get into that I've been reading in the paper recently. I don't want to get into the sort of the back end of it, but I noticed some trending in New York City restaurant world. Meaning
that never happens.
Meaning
what's next, Jason?
Meaning that for some reason it always involves an Italian restaurant or an Italian gentleman. There's some kind of crime that is committed either outside or inside or somewhere else.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And then there's all this sort of I'm not familiar with this. I've never been to La Cali. Have you guys ever been to that pizza place? But you
I
guys familiar with
either.
The story?
Yes.
Something happened with them, whatever. I don't want to get into it. But I thought immediately Paul Castellano being shot outside of Spark's Steakhouse. Then I thought of Joe Gallo being killed inside of Umberto's Clam House on Mulberry or
Boom.
Then I thought of who's a local guy, Staten Island guy that was shot in front of Royal Crown Bakery. But I just noticed some trending there. And it made me very proud to be a New York Italian American again.
Watch your back.
It's almost like, oh God, this John Gotti movie and all this stuff. I don't know, it's not restaurant related, but anyway. So I just noticed that
loosely restaurant related.
It's like, do I have to be more of a self-deprecating Italian now? Like, you know, with sort of all the stuff that's going on. But Italian restaurants, so they've never left. They're just like Chinese food. French are very cyclical. They seem to sort of like pop up and pop down. Come up. You know, they stay open, but
it's
don't hear about
them. It's a hard time for like
fine dining
cuisine French restaurants.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Now, do you notice like the 3 or 4 star restaurants that you're buying from that you're selling to, like not necessarily penny pinching, but aren't buying the don't really necessarily want the higher end stuff? Or are those guys always buying that high end stuff?
Are we at liberty to say?
Yeah,
I don't know. I am more conscious.
I feel like every chef is always watching the bottom line.
Yeah.
Like, without a doubt, they are, but
you have to.
Yeah.
But hotel, do you notice hotel chefs being different? Because they sort of It's more of a boutique kind of enterprise, and they're not as caught up with stuff.
Sometimes
they'll have like a hard-nosed corporate purchasing manager who.
I had
Mike in Cleveland. Pierre, can I speak to Pierre? Pierre. I don't know what this invoice. I don't know what this invoice is.
$545 for ramps.
Morels. They sound interesting, but $22 a pound. I don't know if it works. Like, okay, and hang up the phone. But I just wonder, you know, if definitely it seemed like 4 or 5 years ago people were just really conscious of pricing and stuff like that. Being somebody that buys something for a living, you know, I'm always neurotic about stuff, but I think the fun part about working in a 3 or 4 star world is that you can kind of buy that stuff and the numbers always work out. You're always going to have a per se is going to do 150 covers a night no matter what, and they're going to take in this amount of revenue, whatever. But, you know, just talking to you guys who actually see that word trending that's been coming up this entire show, what's going on with that. But any other restaurants before we sort of phase out of here? Just maybe one more kind of...
Have you been to the Fat Radish?
Not yet.
No, I have not.
They have a pot pie. It's like celery root and black garlic. And it's...
Are they vegetarian?
I think there are a lot of vegetarian, but not entirely.
Yeah.
It's a lot of vegetables, but
it's a female chef, too. Is it?
No. It's two guys who ran something called Silkstone that was like an event planning company.
Oh.
Really good.
And
really cool.
Really awesome.
Over in my hood.
Do you go there a lot?
A couple times. I'm kind of obsessed.
Obsessed with it?
Yeah.
Any obsessions food-wise?
Seaweed.
Seaweed.
Really? Oh, you like specific.
Order a case. Okay. If you're obsessed with seaweed, order a case of lobsters. It's like it's free. It's free of charge. You get seaweed.
Starting to work with.
Oh, you know what we're becoming not really obsessed with, but we're starting to talk about. Hay as a trend.
It is.
A food trend. We just think it's a very interesting one.
Hay is
the new smoking thing.
And at all?
Yeah. It's the new trend.
Look out. It's all about
barnyard.
We'll cut you a deal, Jason.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you want to get on this
trend? $2-$3 a pound for hay? No, but wait. Is it for garnish or people eating hay?
No, we're smoking meats in hay or like infusing ice cream, for example, with hay.
Wow, keep up, buddy.
Smoked meats and fish and all sorts of fish.
Is it the food world getting that boring, or are we just trying to find stuff that like?
I think people just want to find
either that or spaghetti fruit.
Hay or spaghetti fruit? I don't know.
Awesome. I feel like there's a guy somewhere in an office just being like hitting a button about like, all right, hey, like what do we have a lot of? What do we have a lot of? What do we have a lot of? Oh, hey, okay, we just hey is really cool right now. Give me Danielle on the phone. Give me Thomas Keller on the phone.
Hay and weeds. That's I feel like those are the two.
Purslane. That's really good for you though.
Awesome. Yeah, no, it grows in like the cracks of the sidewalk, but it tastes good, and it has like more omega-3.
So it's a power food. Too much omega six in this world.
As long as it takes care of those free radicals. On that note,
as long as developing a purslane vodka.
I think it was an amazing forum today. I really want to thank our guests, Rachel.
Thank you for having us on the show,
Cecilia Estridge of Makuni Wild Harvest.
Thank you for having us.
Check out. Can you guys give plugs on your website and numbers and call and stuff like that?
We're both really bad at Twitter, but I think that it's at Makuni Wild Harvest.
Well, you know,
and then the Makuni
there's some old French chefs that don't follow that technology. Maybe there's a phone number.
Friend us on Facebook. Makuni Wild Harvest is who you should friend.
Definitely friend us on Facebook. If you are interested in receiving a product list, you can direct.
Remember, don't poke Makuni though. They don't like to be poked.
No, we're very sensitive.
We are. Okay. We'll poke you right.
But you
back.
Can like them. But you can like them. And real quick, you guys, your delivery structure is it Monday through Friday?
Monday through Saturday. We're delivering Monday on the road.
The local program is a pre-order because they are harvesting and packing everything to order right now. So that's a Monday for Thursday delivery.
In case there are any chefs listening right now.
Forecasting. I call it the Sam Champion effect.
We are on the clock right now.
Always on the clock.
And Jamie, Jamie has a foundation and a charity event that's happening in 2 weeks.
Nice. Seems like a noble thing to talk about.
talk about. Whereas we were just like, hey,
speaking of Noble, anybody know Noble
oh
Maple
my God,
Syrup?
Noble Maple Syrup.
We've gotten a lot of really
cocktails.
Good
press
plug it. 10 seconds. Go.
All right. So Jamie, please talk about your thing. That's
so it's on April 28th, and okay. It's at the Hudson Terrace. You can buy tickets on Guilt City starting next week. Awesome. And it's the charity is or the organization is Breakthrough New York, and it helps inner city kids from the New York area. Help them stay on track and go to college.
That is definitely
we would love to attend.
Yeah.
We would absolutely
so
love
definitely
that.
Go to Guilt City or you can buy tickets online.
And you can go there that day. It's a little more money, but you could show up that day. And then for people that are landmark oriented, it's right by the Intrepid, right? It's right near the Intrepid.
Yes, it is.
And by the way, we got the space shuttle.
Name a restaurant near it. Yeah.
Houston, we got the space shuttle. Sorry. I don't know if you guys know. Awesome. Anything else you guys wanted to talk about or just sort of plug or whatever?
No, I think that we've...
No, I think we're done
we've
plugging
plugged
things.
As much as is appropriate, maybe a little bit more.
Also, I'm Jason Colucci. I wanted to thank Katie Kiefer and Patrick Martins for letting me host the main course here on the Heritage Radio Network. Thank you, Jack, for all your help. Awesome. Tune in next week, next Sunday.
Happy Passover, happy Easter.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. In 2010, EscapeMaker.com won an Emmy Award for their agritourism webisode, so this year they thought, why not bring agritourism and green getaway ideas right to you? Come to the Green Getaway's Local Food and Travel Expo on April 30th at One Hanson Place, home of the Brooklyn Flea and former Williamsburg Savings Bank. Presented by Amtrak, Zipcar, and I Love New York, the carbon-free event will be a day filled with food, prizes, workshops, and kids' activities. Over 50 getaway destinations, from counties to local farms and bed and breakfasts within a day's drive or train ride of New York City, will be exhibiting on the main floor and in the huge bank vault downstairs. See what's hot in sustainable travel and receive special show-only discounts. Grow NYC will be doing workshops on the green market, and Appalachian Mountain Club will offer workshops on adventure bicycling and hiking via mass transit. EscapeMaker.com will be giving away over 50 getaway prizes, ranging from zipline adventure passes to an overnight stay at Mohonk Mountain House. Travel greener, eat local. Come to the expo on April 30th. Get your tickets now at www.escapemaker.com. Whole Foods Market celebrates Earth Month with the Do Something Real Film Festival, a collection of 6 provocative, character-driven films focused on food, environmental issues, and everyday people with a greater vision. Come see one of the 6 features at City Cinemas Village East from Saturday, April 16th through Thursday, April 21st, every night at 6 p.m. Learn more about the films and special events at www.dosomethingreal.com. That's www.dosomethingreal.com. Sponsored by Whole Foods Market. The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.